Hello and welcome to another episode of It Was Mooney, your source for all things movie streaming and pop culture related. I'm your host, Cosi, and I'm joined always by Wani B. And we're doing a two-man episode today, man. So, cheers.
Cheers, Cosi, cheers.
Yeah, man. Always good to have you here in studio. And, for the first time ever, we are joined in studio today by our live studio ocelot. Give it up for Oscar, the ocelot.
Oscar the Ocelot, hopefully you don't go to the rice paddies too soon.
Dude, look, guys, so I didn't really understand what an ocelot was, so like what I put the order in for it, you know, just to, and I thought, hey, it's a funny.
Kelsey's trying to be Tiger King, but Ocelot Prince, I guess.
Yeah, a little bit Ocelot Prince. Yeah, they are feisty, Juan. It's terrifying.
It's a wild ass cat, y'all. Yeah. It's cute but deadly.
Yeah, that's the exact word. And we are gonna actually get into some cute and deadly cats today. Juan, what we got on tap?
So we're gonna start off always with the classics, some trailer trash.
Yes, sir.
After the trailer trash, we're gonna take a page out of Disney's book. We're gonna take a page out of Disney's book, Deadpool versus Wolverine. Since they feel entitled to rehashing bunch of old shit they made 20 years ago, we're going to feel entitled to rehashing stuff we made 2 weeks ago.
Oh, man.
We're going to give you a player haters reel and a re-review of Deadpool and Wolverine with yours truly, Juani B.
Oh, man. Look.
Yes, they're one and the same at the same time. Yes.
Exactly. I was like, yeah, they're basically the same. I think when you first pitched, I was like, okay, I see where you're going with this. So I'm looking forward to hear just what you have to say.
We're going to have that nostalgia for our work made 2 weeks ago, Cosi.
Exactly. Exactly.
There is no limit to the nostalgia hype for today's product. So I feel, you know, we might as well rehash the stuff we just made, you know, basically last night.
Why not? No, I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, so Wani B, what's on tap?
So, starting off with trailer trash. So, today we're going to review two trailers. We're going to start off with the trailer for Mufasa, speaking of rehashing shit from Disney. And move on to the trailer for, Rings of Power. Rings of Power, yeah. Season 2.
Yes.
All right. So, starting off with Mufasa. Basically, the concept of the movie, the trailer seems to be, we pan out to Rafiki, is that the apes, the baboon's name?
Yeah, that Rafiki, like telling a story, like,
yeah, telling the story to kind of Simba's, I guess, daughter.
Yeah,
about, like, you know, when Mufasa was her age. So basically, you know, we're getting a prequel to The Lion King. We're getting Mufasa's origin story. Not really sure who was asking for that, but, you know, it could be interesting.
It's Mufasa, and before he was Scar, Taka, apparently. Taka. That's a new one.
Yes, yeah. Taka, which I think means something bad in the original Swahili African.
Yeah.
Whereas Mufasa means king. So we find out that Mufasa, right away, he is not part of the royal line. He is a lost cub. He is adopted basically by Scar. The rest of Scar's family doesn't seem to want him.
I really would have thought it would have been the other way around. Like, oh,
you
like,
would think so.
Mufasa's family would think took so. Him.
And actually, Scar or Taka in this movie is really kind.
Yeah,
talks about how he always wants a brother. You don't see any kind of dark signs or dark urges. He seems like a really kind guy. I will say they gave him this kind of ashy gray complexion. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah,
they didn't give that boy no lotion.
No, like I think his fur, just because at the root of it, it was at the ends of it was getting dark, but definitely saw mainly the ashen colored hair.
Kind of
was
pale very, looking. Very cool one.
Very pale.
Bad signs just from as far as he seems to have bad luck. You can kind of see why he's getting some resentment.
No, like
kind of wild that it ends up with him not being king, considering. There's a literal line in the book about how Taka is our future king, and he's the royal prince.
But again, the way they're kind of setting up is like, oh, Taka might go down like a dark path that we all know that he'll go down.
See, we know that's going to happen. The trailer actually doesn't show us anything.
Yeah,
that would incline us to believe. Taka seems like a really good brother the entire time.
Yeah.
It almost seems to focus more on Taka than Mufasa.
Than Mufasa, even,
quite frankly, he gets more lines. He seems more personable. Mufasa seems like the token straight character to Scar's, you know, more engaging, more outspoken, thoughtful brother, I guess, yeah. Half-brother.
You know what it kind of reminds me
of? Not half-brother, what do you call him, step-brother?
Step-brother. It reminds me of, it's another anime movie coming out called Transformers 1. It's about, like, a young...
Oh, the one with the, with the Transformers got the dick-sucking lips?
Yeah, yeah, that's what you want to call it.
You've seen the posters.
I can't unsee
they
that
They got
now.
The little... They got the little duck face.
Well, now I can't unsee it now.
The look that they're about to make out with the camera, bro.
Oh, that's great. No, but in that one, like, it shows a young Optimus Prime and
I don't know.
Megatron, like, when they were, like, real young on Cybertron. It was really cool.
I couldn't get over the lips on the posters.
Yeah, it was like, they're too realistic. Like,
listeners, y'all have to check out these lips. It's some human-ass lips on these robots. If y'all remember the Transformers, Michael Bay, I mean, you know, who doesn't? But, you know, they did not have human-ass lips. I just want to point that out.
Just a bunch of, like...
I don't know how you transform a truck into something that has human lips. I just
want to
point
that out.
Bunch of
shards, basically, at the end. Yeah.
So I've seen this take where they're making kind of beloved properties and making them more anime-ish. I don't know if you've seen... I know y'all talked about it. My Adventures with Superman.
Yes.
Was an anime take on Superman. They just released Suicide Squad Isekai. Basically, another anime. They just released a Rick and Morty anime.
That one, yeah, I checked that out recently. That was crazy. Yeah.
Straight up Rick and Morty anime. Anime is becoming more popular. I wouldn't say I'm a hardcore anime fan, but you know, we've had friend of the show Jim here a couple times.
Jimothy.
I've definitely have my fair share of love for some anime. It's just, you know, I'm not one of those hardcore that could name, you know, 20 years worth of different shows. I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it, this kind of American anime crossover. Before, it was just pretty much Avatar: The Last Airbender,
which was the seriously one of the great anime.
One of the great TV shows. It's not real anime, but it's very anime inspired.
Also, I put the Boondocks up there as well. Just that style,
very clearly anime inspired.
Just great content coming from that.
Not storytelling and humor wise, definitely not. But animation, the fighting in the Boondocks was clearly meant to resemble an anime show.
Taken from not just kung fu films, but like other anime panels as well. So yeah,
it was really, really cool. It was awesome.
Yeah. Oh, man, we got sidetracked, dude.
We did get a little sidetracked, but not pointlessly. So, yes. But anyways, what's your take on it, Kosi, as far as Mufasa?
No, like in terms of Mufasa, like I've watched. I'm a fan of Lion King 2, Simba's Pride. So seeing Kiara, who was a main character in that, being part of this frame story, just being told the story about her grandfather, I think it's a really cool concept. Like Solo, which is a movie I loved. I personally love seeing the Kessel Run. I know a lot of fans didn't really need to see the Kessel Run, but I'm glad we got it. In this case, we're going to see just how Mufasa, how Taka maybe became Scar. And I don't mind seeing that, but you know, we didn't need it. But then again, the same can be said for any movie made in Hollywood. Who really needs these? But my only critique is just, you know, the CG doesn't look as good. If it doesn't look like that much different than like the 2019 version, which I loved a lot. So I'm kind of let down by just the.
I do want to touch on that because the 2019 Lion King had some of the most impressive CG. I honestly didn't realize till halfway through the movie. You know, I don't know what I thought. I just thought in my mind, oh yeah, we're seeing these lions on a green screen, and then they're being superimposed on a real. You know, and it didn't occur to me that Pride Rock, all that stuff was CG.
Yeah, right? I think a lot of folks maybe like would have forgotten that. I love when
how impressive that was. That's an absolutely incredible technological feat. And I get where Cozy's coming from here, where this doesn't look like they took it further. I don't know how much further you can honestly take it, to be blunt, but I can see where you're coming from. Where if you go look at the original Avatar, and then you go look at Avatar 2. What was the subtitle for that one?
The Way of the Water.
Way of the Water. You know, you could see James Cameron taking it to the next level with his technology. Versus with this, it looks a little bit more of the same. Honestly, from what the trailer's giving us story-wise, it's not... No, it's always a question of, do we need this prequel? Do we need this movie? And, you know, you could take it to Cozy's extreme and say, do we need any of this? Get all nihilistic with it. But honestly, my main thing is just that what's there is not particularly compelling. right? It's, do we really need a story where Scar's the good guy?
Yeah, we kind of already know. We kind of know where that's
headed. And then somehow he, like, Mufasa is a stepchild, and like he's adopted and stuff, and he's not even initially accepted. Well, ends up being king. I don't know. It felt like I was supposed to be having sympathy for Scar now. Scar's one of those characters you don't really need to have sympathy for.
You know, I don't even have a problem with what you just said with how they're writing. It's like, that makes sense to me, but it's just in terms of just like, okay, the narrative-wise where it fits in, we don't really need it in the first place. So it's like,
It just seems like nonsensical conflict, to the original plot. Mufasa did not seem, just from their personalities, the way they behaved themselves, you would not think that Mufasa was the one that was raised up in an insecure setting, that he was the outsider. You know, he just seems so regal, so confident. And Scar seems so petty and selfish and, you know, jaded with the world. And it just, like, you know, the happy-go-lucky Taka we see here that's supposed to be king, that is kind and helpful to Mufasa. You don't, it's hard to imagine how this guy goes from this movie to the second movie. I guess the first movie.
Yeah. But I will say, though, I am curious to see how that goes. I'm definitely going to watch this movie. This voice cast, just to go into just who's in it. So we have Aaron Pierre as Mufasa, Kelvin Harrison Jr. as Taka, John Canny coming back from the original 2019 movie as Rafiki. We have Seth Rogen as Pumbaa, Billy Eichner as Timon. We have Donald Glover coming back as Simba. Mads Mikkelsen, he's playing the pale white lion that we saw in the trailer. He's like the bad guy.
I will be the Lion King lion.
Yeah,
it's very cringe.
It's a great it's a great cast. Like it's an incredible cast. So I think
it's a very white lion too. I feel like they're trying to play racial politics in with it.
Reminds me of Kimba the White Lion. Remember that one? The other version that came out. There's a whole like legal battle. No, like that's definitely what I thought when I first saw when I first saw Mads Mikkelsen's character. Oh, it's Kimba. But no, like I'm not like down on it. I'm just like, okay. I'm definitely gonna watch this, but I wanted to like this more, but you know, it was kind of just like meh to me. But
prequels
always
have a hard time, but this seems like you're just making up a story just to make something up.
Yeah.
I don't see where really you get. I don't know. We'll see. I'll hold out judgment so far.
Yep. So we'll see. December 20th, coming to theaters is Mufasa the Lion King.
That's pretty soon.
Yeah.
All right. So for our second movie, Rings of Power. The season 2 trailer really seems to go heavily into how Sauron is kind of consolidating his power, still warming his way in. He now seems to come off as clearly an elf, whereas in the first, whereas in season 1 he seemed to be playing a human, and he was clearly trying to hide as a human.
So this is still like talking about how Sauron like became that big flaming eye.
The big guy, the armor.
Okay, in the beginning of the first
one. They even show a little bit of the crown he wears.
Yeah, I saw
the beginning of Lord of the Rings. But basically it's starting to show how Sauron has warmed his way in, starting to show how some of the conflict is developing. It's a surprisingly long trailer, but it almost feels like a teaser in that I don't know if they went into too many details.
No, a lot of just like quick shots, but looks great.
Admittedly, season 1, the problem was never how it looked. It looked like they had spent the money.
Yes.
Amazing sets. It's just, you know, bad writing, in my opinion. Incoherent plots and writing.
And like the first one, like the trailers for these have, just the marketing, it's always been really, really good. It always showcases just the best aspects of the series, which are the visuals. So like I always say that even from the first season, the trailer for that one I thought looked great. So same for this one, but I definitely see why you have an issue with this one though.
We see some stuff again where like Sauron is somehow messing with what's his name? Not Galadriel, the Smith. The Elven Smith. I forgot his name. Celebrimbor.
Okay.
Right,
mm-hmm.
Right. Like the legendary Elven Smith, and he's like turning like his skin ashen or something, like giving him some kind of disease. We see Galadriel trying to team up with the recast dark elf. Not the black elf, the dark elf. Very different.
So like an evil elf.
Yes. So okay. Like an evil fallen elf who's leading the orcs up to that point.
Okay.
But he is not... He actually hates Sauron. At first, you think he's like part of Sauron's crew because it's the orcs, and the orcs don't really can't even really go out in the sun, so to speak, like seemingly. And then he is trying to team up with Galadriel now. Again, got recast, so it can be a little confusing. The guy from season one got recast, so the new dark elf is somebody else. And once again, that is not the black elf. There's a different black elf who everybody just pretends is a regular elf because he got Rivita like him.
And it comes right. I was waiting, like, what do you mean? I was like almost going to write that down, but then wait, come back to that goddamn Viligo joke.
I had to. I'm sorry. No, they honestly don't emphasize him too much in the trailer. Or the woman he was in love with. I can't remember if she was still alive at the end or not. Anyways, we don't really see much of the hobbits or Gandalf either, as far as I can tell. It is a bunch of cool looking shots, but there's not much story to be told, other than Sauron kind of seemingly warming his way in, talking about how he's defending against something. I don't know. It's hard to make Sauron sympathetic. There has rarely been so clear cut a case of a villain in, you know, a popular work of fiction being just a pure embodiment of evil and not really needing more characterization than being a pure embodiment of evil.
So knowing the books, though, right? So in season two, like at the end, at the end of this, do you think Sauron's going to be in a position to just take over and like defeat Galadriel? And because I remember in like,
well, you can't have Galadriel defeated because she's very much alive and well later. You can't have Sauron defeated because he's very much alive.
So where would they even go? Like, what would his
I'm honestly end game just be, treating this as a fan fiction of Lord of the Rings, in my personal view. It just happens to have the Lord of the Rings name, and it's technically an official property. But seriously, I mean, I've seen actual better fan fiction on random Reddit threads than some of this stuff. I don't know where they go. I don't know what they're trying to do. I don't know why Sauron looks like an elf or who he's trying to fool.
So has Sauron ever been an elf?
Not as far as I could tell. And, I mean, they saw him be a human and he outed himself to Galadriel. I don't know. He keeps trying to, like, justify his actions and, like, they're trying to, like, play, like, oh, Sauron thinks he's the good guy or he's doing something, you know, like, trying to have a positive twist to it. But again, it's Sauron. If there's one guy who you really don't need more than, yeah, this guy wants to be evil and conquer the world, this was a guy who you could get away with that. Some villains really don't need to be more deep.
No, I think what I have to do is just maybe just go back and just finish season one. Because, again, I would say this, you know, it comes out in, what, 10 days. This does look good. Just from the trailers, from what I'm seeing, and I do like what I'm seeing here. But I do wish I liked what I saw with the first couple episodes, and I just wasn't all that impressed. But I'm definitely going to give season two a chance. It's not like I'm not going to watch it, but I also will definitely finish the first season as well. Because, you know, I want this to do well. You know, I'm a big fan of Lord of the Rings. And, you know, it sucks that, you know, like that first season didn't really land with not just one, but like a lot of people weren't really feeling it. But I guess enough felt it that they could make a season two. So we'll see with this one and it comes out.
Especially they have a couple of seasons already.
Yeah, already filmed and whatnot. So hopefully they, and I know they got like a new writers, new people, like new folks are on this. So we'll see. And, you know, it comes out August 29th.
Visually, it looks impressive. I'll give it that.
Oh yeah,
that's as far as I'll go.
Yes, sir. But
it was. If you're a big Lord of the Rings fan, which I've generally considered myself to be, there's more hardcore ones, right? But if I'm pretty a big Lord of the Rings fan. It just, you know, it took the names and the scenery and the things we loved. You don't need to have your own spin. Prequels are always tricky. But, you know, what House of the Dragon does well is it doesn't step on Game of Thrones, right? It doesn't insult, you know, the fans before it.
I guess since I haven't seen most of it, so you think it Rings of Power doesn't let Lord of the Rings stand on its own, it kind of steps on it in, like, a way that kind of hurts it, you think?
Essentially, like, so a lot of the stuff is, a lot of the people, a lot of the stuff is unrecognizable.
Okay, that's what you mean.
Especially Galadriel, which was supposed to be the main character. It's hard to, like, understand how multiple thousand-year-old Galadriel is acting like a teenage brat in this show when we've already seen her, you know, a few more thousand years into the future, and she's like this regal, powerful, you know, all-knowing witch kind of character. And, you know, it just kind of wild to see the imbalance. It's not like an actual teenage Galadriel. At this point, she's one of the oldest, most powerful, most well-known elves, even when the show starts.
Right.
So, I don't know, for them to try act like she's kind of bratty and headstrong, it's like, it's not what you expect. Same with Celeb Brimbor being a dumbass. Like, he's supposed to be the most legendary elven smith of all time, the guy that made the rings. You really needed to have something that sold Sauron tricking him, and that Sauron, like, you know, getting himself, warming his way into the elf's graces. And they didn't. He just kind of showed up one day and they're like, oh, okay, yeah, just come through and teach me how to do smithing. And apparently I, the thousand-year-old elven smith, just don't know anything about metallurgy, and you can teach me some basic stuff real quick.
And I think it comes back to what you're saying, because what you're saying really isn't a bad, like, storyline, but I guess how it was written and how it was executed just didn't work. Because, yeah, I can understand, like, Galadriel acting like that, like a petulant teenager right here. You know, they have to, but it's up to them to convey why and have you the viewer believe why she's acting this way. And it seems as though they just didn't do that, which a lot of, I know it's easy to say, hey, just write it better, but no, it's really tough to, like, you know, take it's a just, detour.
There's already an established character here. Yeah. Galadriel, if you remember from the first movie or from the book, she just comes across as this really powerful, wise, ambitious, like, she's really on top of her stuff, right? Like, she just seems like she's scheming, like, she has a greater plan, like, she has this regal kind of over-everything personality.
And I think what Rings of Power is going to posit is, what if she wasn't always like that? Which I think is a cool storyline. It's all about how it's executed. It's all about execution.
I suppose it can be.
It's all about execution.
I suppose it can be, but I don't know. I just feel like they took it to too much of an extreme.
No,
because these are immortal elves, right?
Yeah.
You know, a few more thousand years is not like
they can change that much.
That's part of their thing, actually. That's one of their weaknesses, that they don't change that much, that they're kind of stayed and it's a little bit stuck in their ways.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Because they're so long-lived, right? Like, you kind of see how Elrond and the elves didn't immediately march, how the men had to kind of take charge, how the elves eventually left Middle-earth. You know, they just had, like, they just moved slower, so to speak, right? They weren't the first to jump and take the lead. I don't know. It's just a bunch of stuff. Some stuff was good. It wasn't an entire failure. But it just didn't feel coherent, competently written. And then the guy ended up being Gandalf. Like, the old guy ended up being, I don't know. I don't want to devolve into a whole review of it, of season one. But, yeah, I was not a big fan. So, yeah, season two will come out soon. We'll see how it goes.
I'm looking forward to it. But, yeah, hopefully it's just better than what, again, the stuff
elves, I saw. Elves, so. Sauron doesn't seem like the solution to the problem from the first one, but I guess we'll see how. I'm honestly not understanding, because they saw who he was, so I'm not understanding how they suddenly have an elf version of Sauron and nobody's noticing. But anyways, so moving on to the main topic of the day.
Oh boy, so we had to bring it back, huh?
Listen, y'all, I know. Y'all missed me last time we had this.
Did we, though?
I know y'all listeners heard the episode without me with Cousin Chris and Aaron reviewing Deadpool and obviously thought it was the worst episode there ever was. Probably had to turn it off 5 minutes in when y'all realized how trash it was.
Jeez, Juan, tell us how you really feel, man.
No, I'm kidding, man. I know y'all did your best.
Yeah, man.
It can't all be me. No, I'm kidding, y'all. No, but listen, so I'm just going to say it. Disney be rehashing old 30-year-old movies, just straight up rehashing, not really bringing anything to them. Just like, here it is, sitting, filling us up with member berries. So
like, what, do you just hate fun? Is that what you're saying, Juan? Do you hate things that are awesome and great?
Don't hate fun and don't hate things that are awesome and great. Which is why I hate Deadpool and Wolverine.
Oh, man.
No, listen. So we're going to do another review of Deadpool and Wolverine, and we're going to do another Play a Hater's Reel, where I give you why I hate a movie that's wildly popular and everybody's on board with. Aaron was kind of down on it from what I heard, but he was mostly like, oh, this is a pretty fun movie that could have been better. So let's get right to it, shall we, Kosi?
Yeah, so I guess what are just your initial thoughts?
All the haters came from around the bay. We gotta get the rights to that song.
No, they'll sue us into oblivion.
Can we call it a parody if we add the haters line?
No, like I'll use a free use song and then we'll just like sing over it.
Come on, Outkast, be chill.
I am the clip.
How many people are still singing play ball in 2024? That song came out 20 years ago. Now listen, y'all.
So what'd you think of the movie? Just off rip.
Like seriously, my one word review. I'm gonna give an analogy for how I think I viewed this.
Yes, paint us a picture, Juan, please.
Paint a picture with an analogy. So, you know what member berries are, right?
Yes.
You watched the South Park episode?
Of course.
So, for the uncultured swine among our audience, member berries were South Park's answer to the nostalgia craze, which is still ongoing. Basically, these little grape-like, blueberry-like fruits.
Fruity goodness.
That had little smiley, cute little smiley faces on them. Yeah. And their main gimmick was that they'd just be like, oh, remember Luke Skywalker?
Made you all warm and fuzzy inside.
Yeah, remember RoboCop? Remember Jackie Chan?
I remember those things.
Yeah, I remember. Oh, I remember. Just like, it sounded like two drunk old dudes getting a little old. Like me and Kosi talking about the good old days. Our back is hurting and shit. Our knees aren't what they used to be. And we talk about how movies were the best back when we were 15 years old. That's what it sounds like, right? That general vibe of two drunk dudes talking about how they remember all the good old times. Very honestly, clever, insightful tear up of the general nostalgia movement, and tied it in pretty well actually to some of the reactionary movement on the political side with Trump, with people who reminisce on some not so nice things from their youth.
Yeah, and I'll say, as a person that actually unabashedly enjoys member berries, I do love that stuff. I agree that it can be abused and overused, but I think it's all subjective at the end of the day. But I definitely have seen some times where it's like kind of just thrown out there, and that South Park episode really, really made a great, hilarious point about it, and that's why I appreciated that so much.
Absolutely legendary South Park episode. Yeah. So anyways, my analogy for this Deadpool. All right, so a movie like Spider-Man No Way Home, which had some similar concept.
Incredible member berries.
And some similar concept, leaned heavily on the member berries.
Gigantic morsels of member berries, yes.
But okay, so I would call that movie a member berry key lime pie, right? You take the member berries that we all know and love, but you mix it up, you create something new. You still give the audience that flavor they know, that thing they know, but you add to it.
And it's
you
nice and even throughout. Nice.
It's processed in a way that gives the audience something new to chew on.
Okay.
Something new to enjoy and appreciate while bringing back, getting pulled in.
Old stuff. Taking you back.
Right. So
like a nice warm hug.
Yeah. So that's my analogy for No Way Home.
I agree with that.
Is Disney executives mashing member berries into a blender and taking one of those force-feeding tubes they used to use in suffragettes back in the day and just, slamming it down your gullet.
Wow, you think it was like a lot, like really heavy? Like,
I mean, it's flavorless. It's just the member berry sustenance. The bear, here's... squished up member berries. You like member berries, so we're just going to give you as many member berries as quickly and as humanly possible without really giving into any thought to how we can make the member berries more interesting, add to them.
And for the listeners, sorry, Juan. For the listeners, Juan is probably referring to like the cameos and stuff and the cool characters from other movies in it. It's been out, so we can just say spoilers. So.
Yeah, we're past spoilers.
Okay, so he's talking about the cameos. You don't think those cameos like served a story? Because I believe they were cool and served the story.
Okay.
It made sense narratively.
We'll break some of these down.
Sure, okay. Sure.
So, Elektra. What did Elektra add to this story, in your opinion? Well, your words.
She basically helped Deadpool and Wolverine get to the point, basically point C in their story, which was to get through the portal and into.
Okay, so instead of Elektra, it had been Sue Storm. What would have changed? Other than, you know, the fight scene would have looked a little bit different CGI wise. Yeah, what would have changed?
Yeah, nothing would have changed, but it was really cool to see Jennifer Garner. Like,
okay,
I have
she
to
was,
admit that.
So she wasn't a real character. My point is, the movie added nothing to Elektra's story from the movies, from her movies.
Okay.
Right? It added no further understanding
or nothing to that character.
Blipped
there. Yeah. Okay.
Right? And, you know, her specifically, the character from the movies, who we know and probably not, frankly, love all that much. You know, there's nothing specific to that that's in these movies. It's just, hey, here's Elektra. It's cool.
You see, for me, that was also like Blade. That was really fucking cool to see Blade.
It's those
and
berries. And if you had been in some of them, again, another example. Okay, I thought a way better Blade, the same exact cameo, but done way better, was What We Do in the Shadows, season one.
Okay, that was actually really hilarious.
Where they have where they have the
listeners,
conference
please watch
call,
the show.
The conference call with all the different vampires, and they bring they bring like Dracula and stuff, and all of a sudden out of nowhere, Wesley Snipes is one of the vampires they bring in to you know, he's one of the council of vampires they're bringing in. It's clearly played as a joke. He doesn't have a bunch of lines. We're not going back to his real character. It's clearly just a gag, right?
Right.
It's just a cameo. It's just an Easter egg.
That was a great gag.
And it's just a funny gag. You laugh. You're done with it. You don't have to think about it too much. Here again, they present him as like, oh, he's one of the resistance. He's this character. They give him several scenes. They have him say, you know, several in the know lines.
Yes,
and several.
Yeah.
But again, like, okay, his motherfucker skating uphill line. Obviously, in the first, and when he first said it, it's like, okay, it's just this clever way of saying, you know, oh, people always always trying to do stupid things, try shit that's impossible, that doesn't make any sense, right? And nowadays, he's just like, oh, because we know that's a meme on the internet, we're just going to say it again. Like, there's no real context to
you feel almost like Bart in class, where like, hey, say the line, Bart.
Literally, okay, Blade is in here, and we know this is a meme.
Say the line, Blade.
So we're just going to have him say it. It's not going to be any real context to where it makes like real good sense that he says it.
I see your point, though, because going back to No Way Home, the part where MJ comes in, it's like, hey, Peter, and the three of them are in a circle, and they point like, oh, which one? Narratively, that was like she was coming in to go get Peter to go get him, but also they had the opportunity to remake the meme. Yeah.
Or they had, I'm something of a scientist myself. Again, you know it's a meme.
Well, that was kind of cheesy.
It is.
To me, that one was kind of cheesy.
It is cheesy.
But I loved it.
But again, it's just a split thing. You know, they don't keep doing a bunch of lines. They just have that one cheesy line, and then he's his own character. They kind of build on the character. Again, it's the same character you know from the first movie, right? But they find a way to still kind of expand on Green Goblin, make him interesting, make him tragic again, have that same split personality. So you have that continuity where you feel like you're watching the same character from the same movie with the same actor. But they're building from that.
Yeah, there's been progression. Yeah.
Or when Andrew Garfield Spider-Man rescues MJ, it's like, oh, he failed to rescue Gwen in his storyline, right? So now he's kind of getting that opportunity for redemption. You kind of have that through line, that evolution of the story. You kind of, you know, you get those feels of like, oh, okay, I'm seeing the redemption that he never got before. It adds to not just to this movie, No Way Home, but to the previous movie. It feels like a proper follow up to the previous movie. Whereas these, it just felt like, oh, what are a bunch of cool characters we can take from our past? And the audience will be like, oh my god, cool! Remember Blade? Oh, remember Elektra? I remember Elektra. That's all I could felt like.
Okay, no, I definitely see that. I'll say,
and I mean, those are the big cameos. Then we got guys like Toad. Then we got guys like Sabretooth, the girl from X2, the with the adamantium claws,
Lady Deathstrike,
Pyro.
Yeah, Pyro. I love Pyro in this movie. As a mini bad guy.
Yeah, we got like a cheap version of Juggernaut. You know, we got like all these like Like, some of them are the same actors. Like, oh, but again, it's like, oh, remember Sabretooth? Oh, I remember. Look, he's right there. And then what does he do? Like, nothing. Just like the random gag. Just like a random visual gag, basically.
Okay, no. And just, I guess to move it along then, I think, yes, like, because I think that that whole section was just, hey, look at our entire catalog of characters. But I think those characters that you mentioned off were kind of inconsequential in terms of, like, they're helping the two titular characters, Deadpool, Wolverine. What I love most about this movie was the relationship between Deadpool, Wolverine. That was really, they kind of sort of were smashed together.
I do really enjoy that. I will give them credit. That was fun.
It shined. I think,
the chemistry between them.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing.
Between them. I mean, those are two great actors. They were clearly having a lot of fun playing together.
Yeah, and I'll say this again, like, it's a credit to Sean Levy and the writers with this, when that, you really have to nail a movie called Deadpool Wolverine.
You're going to credit writers on this movie, but I'll let you continue.
Yeah, like you really, I'll definitely credit the writers on, like, with Deadpool Wolverine, just that relationship and having that through line of, like, Deadpool's meaning was trying to become someone that was needed, and then Wolverine kind of, like, failed in that regard of, like, being someone that, like, had people that needed him and kind of sort of met in the middle. I just love that relationship and how they nailed that in, like, such a big movie, because if you mess that up and mess the cameos up, it's like, yeah, like.
So, I'm going to, again, I love their chemistry on screen, right? Yeah. But as far as their actual, not just plot, but, like, their character, the way their characters developed in the movie, so to speak. Mm. Okay, so the plot was openly asinine, in my opinion. I mean, to the point, like, yeah, you can say, oh, yeah, comedy movies, you know, you don't have to think about it that deep. But I feel like if you're going to do that, then you got to have a somewhat simple plot that's easy to follow.
Yeah, I guess. So what about it was...
Okay, y'all even talked about it somewhat. But okay, so the whole... First of all, starting off. So Deadpool, merc with a mouth, irreverent, kind of douchey, fun. You know, yeah, he gets to be the hero a little bit. And he kind of has a heart of gold a little bit. But he's never seen like the kind of guy that was like openly waiting on a bunch of people's validation. And that needed to be like considered some great hero. In my opinion, I just never got that feeling from him. So how does the movie start? Oh, he's depressed and bummed, and his girlfriend left him, and everything's fallen to shit.
Because... I think that's really what it did. His girlfriend leaving him.
But like... no, his girlfriend left him after he got bummed and everything went to shit because he apparently went to Marvel
and they said no.
and he went to the MCU, which I don't understand how he got there. First of all,
I say with that Time Watch thing, that's how
understood it. Cable's thing. Yeah. It never was implied that he could multiverses, but sure, we'll say somehow he did. But for some inexplicable reason, he decides, okay, my only way to have meaning is to go to a different universe. There's one specific universe the audience knows, and ask Happy Hogan to let me join the Avengers. Apparently, that's the only way he could feel like he could be a hero.
It was actually really cool to see Happy Hogan.
It was cool to see him. It was cool to see him. I'll give him that. But it's like, wait, that's literally the only thing you could come up with? Like, I don't know. The Deadpool I'm familiar with would have been like, oh, okay, y'all don't want me. Fuck y'all. I'm going to do my own thing. And I, like, you know,
I'll push
blows
back
up bad guys and does, like heroic shit, but in a fucked up way that the other Marvel guys don't approve of.
I'll push back on that because Deadpool he's sensitive. Like, he actually cares. He even said in his little speech to Happy Hogan, and we know this from the first two movies, he cares about that mushy-gushy stuff. So I can see him taking that personally. Just from the character we've seen you've seen the first two movies.
I don't know, like, but see, Deadpool generally taking things personally has meant, okay, fuck you to the person that wronged me. Right?
He's done that, yeah.
Right? This felt like, oh, man, I want to be so sad. I want to grow a weird haircut and become a car salesman get dumped by my girlfriend and everything.
He was definitely rock bottom there.
We actually barely even see the girlfriend or any of the characters from the previous Deadpool.
Yeah, they're all confined to that.
They did an Ant-Man 3 situation where they took all those previous characters that we absolutely loved and were hilarious and added... They weren't like major plot elements, but they added a fun element to the story. And they just basically sidelined all of them.
Yeah, they put them all in that one party. They have everyone there.
Yeah, the blind grandma got a few extra lines. But like the guy, I can't remember his name, the guy from the cab.
Depender.
He was basically
five lines.
Not even, I don't think. His girlfriend, who's like supposedly love interest, that was like the whole motivation. She was she might as well have not been in the movie. I don't think she got more than three lines. I honestly can't remember what she said.
I think the reason that happened because I think they just weren't important to the story being told. I think that's why they.
But that's the thing. They from the perspective of Deadpool, that's his entire motivation.
They are.
That's his stated reason for doing everything. The reason he's getting all. Like he's a car salesman that's supposedly all depressed and doesn't want him to do anything with heroics. The reason he puts on the suit and starts doing stuff again is to save these people.
Yeah, he's called to action.
So you know you can't be like, oh, they actually don't matter, because that's his entire motivation. Not and they're fun people. Yeah. I'm not saying they have to be super involved with the plot, but why would you sideline them entirely? Why would you sideline his relationship with this girl entirely?
In terms of the multiversal romp that it was, what could those people in there have really done to help
them? I mean, you have a bunch of random characters getting up to hijinks. Why can't some of them be these guys? Right? Okay. Why can't Dupinder be the one driving car?
Yeah, okay, like some like a magic school bus type situation where everyone gets on. Okay.
Why can't...
I'm sorry. So you would have traded... This is crazy. You would have traded seeing a Blade, seeing a Jennifer Garner, seeing Channing Tatum for having Dupinder, Colossus, Blind Owl come aboard with them because even, you know these guys.
Even if it's you're only connected a few with scenes. Them. Like Michael Pena never. Dupinder wasn't like a heavy. It was just a few gag scenes.
Exactly.
It was just a few gag scenes. I see what you mean. So, okay, like the scene where they're driving and fighting in the. What car was that?
The Honda.
Yeah, the Honda. The Honda, that nice,
Honda Odyssey.
Nice
Honda Odyssey.
The Honda Odyssey. So when the Honda Odyssey, they could have had Dupinder be the one driving them and telling some other crazy story from his life. You know what I'm saying? They don't have to sideline them entirely.
She would have switched them just with better characters that you knew and loved.
An actual kind of love story or like love element where we actually see Monica's character.
And she's on that mission with him. Okay.
Yeah, or like something. You don't have to have her like be deeply involved. But then you just don't get anything.
Where would the Wolverine come in? Because the Wolverine's another big draw to this. Like,
bro, that's even worse. They don't even show. They just tell you, oh, hey, he's the worst. He's the worst Wolverine. He failed his universe. He's just sitting in a pub. You don't understand what universe he failed or why. You don't see any of the people he supposedly cares about.
As much as I liked how they handled that. How we didn't really have to see it. We got that from Hugh Jackman's that fireplace performance when he was like talking X-23. We got that. We kind of got it when Cassandra Nova got in his brain and all that.
Even when he got it in his brain, he's just like, oh, you just hear screaming. Indiscriminate vague screaming. That's it. You don't hear, not even like Rogue screaming or something or like somebody screaming on an actual word like, oh, Logan, please help, or Logan, please don't. You know, something where like, you can see why he feels so guilty. You're just like, oh, he's the worst Wolverine. Why? He's just this man. Trust me. We don't have time for that.
Do you think, to me, looking back, I think that worst Wolverine was almost a moniker he put on himself to show how much he felt he messed up.
I thought the TVA dude also kind of mentioned something along those lines.
True, but I think it's almost become like, I think it's almost a personification. Like, his guilt created this almost aura persona on him. That's how I kind of took that. Because you're right, they didn't really explain that part.
Okay, yeah. I'll give, since I'm comparing it to other multiversal stuff, let's compare it to Loki. Right. So Loki, the TV show, starts off with actually a different Loki than the one we're used to.
Right.
Right. The one we're used to is dead. Right. Died in Endgame.
Infinity War. The beginning of
Infinity War. And then the one we're seeing is one from the timeline hijinks in Endgame.
But yes.
Right. So it's basically Loki, but at the beginning of the whole
He hadn't gone through Thor Ragnarok.
So
and all
it's technically
that stuff.
A different Loki.
Yeah.
But right away they basically show him the scenes of him dying and all this stuff happening, and
he's caught up to speed.
You know, speed boosted through some of the character growth we've already seen. It's still kind of his own thing a little bit, but very soon we come to like see, okay, yeah, he's kind of his own thing, but we now feel like he's kind of like the Loki we've come to know as well.
He like, got like a little download of what.
Yeah, it's kind of like a Matrix download.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically, a quick run through a speed run through a character, an emotional maturity.
He watched a YouTube video of like his other life.
Yeah. So and then from then on, the Loki we get is true to that. It's true to the character of this was a different Loki. It's still not quite the same. But, you know, he's seen the person. He still, you know, ends up being a lot of the Loki. you know, that's been influenced by some of the stuff we have seen. It's kind of this interesting take on the character, but it's like wholly realized. Yeah. Whereas with this, it just feels like, oh, hey, we don't know, really know his backstory. We're just garbled it, right? We don't have that familiarity with him other than, yeah, we know it's Logan, but, I mean, none of the Logans we've seen at any point. The only one we've seen close to it is Old Man Logan from the Logan movie, where he seems depressed and all out of shape and stuff, but it's clearly not the same as this. It's clearly him has failed some previous thing. He failed to save somebody, or he killed somebody. We don't know.
Yeah, and I will say, though, Loki is a, what, 8-10 episode thing. It's a 3-hour movie. I think it's a bit, it's always a bit tougher to cram all that or trying to cut the fat off to put this into 2.5-hour movie. I think they did the best they could because of all the plate they spun.
The Cassandra scene where they went into that weird, I don't know what that was, that weird ghost world.
Yeah.
He could have easily had a flashback there where he showed like some cut scenes of, I mean, we didn't need the whole breakdown, but we could have seen him stabbing Rogue. We could have seen, you know, Professor X falling apart mentally. We could have seen the Sentinels destroying the world. We could have seen something, right? We could have seen something without a big spoiler or taking like tons of time away from the movie. But we're just repeatedly told, oh, hey, he failed his universe. It's still there. The universe is still there. So I'm not entirely sure why they keep saying it's just been destroyed and that his universe needs to be fixed, or why he's even aware that there's different universes, because usually people haven't been aware immediately that there's a multiverse. But yeah, we're just take it for granted that he for some reason does. It's not written. It just frankly just feels like it's just not written.
Yeah, to me it came across as just his guilt just coming out and having it just play out that way. I think in terms of all the issues you have with it, what did you? I guess going back to all like the titular characters, their relationship. How did you feel about it like towards the end when like they had their bro moment where they like linked up and like
So again, I think it's just sold so much because of how great the actors themselves are and how great their performances are.
Like you could feel the 20 years of like, oh, they've been
right. Like these guys, guys are friends and they're having a fun time together. So the chemistry just shone so well. But I felt more like in a buddy cop way, not, oh, the plot earned this. It's just, oh, these guys are so fun together. You know, like Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker in Rush Hour. It's just two dudes having fun with it.
Did you? Because I know I had a good time. I think for the most part, did you at least have a good time watching the movie?
I had fun with some of it, but I honestly even some of the stuff, like, I didn't laugh as much as I thought I would.
Oh, there I was laughing throughout there the movie. Were some, this was the funniest of the three movies.
Really, I actually thought Deadpool 2 was a lot funnier. Even Deadpool 1 with the whole thing with Francis. I don't know, man. It's just like the joke, I did chuckle a lot, and I did find a lot of things funny, but it's just, it felt a little, I mean, the theater I was at wasn't like cracking up, it was late at night too, so I don't know, maybe that was why, but it's not like that was one of those theaters where it was cracking up.
Man, it's also been out for a minute already.
Yeah, so. It's been out for a minute, so maybe that's why people were just rewatching it a couple times, so
I feel that.
But I mean, my wife wasn't like, I wasn't cracking up like I did during Thor 3 or the second Deadpool or some of these other movies. It felt a little closer to Thor 4 in terms of how much the humor hit. Where it's like, yeah, some fun gags, but it's like, okay, some of it is, oh, this is clever, but I'm not like cracking up. I'm just, hi, I appreciate this.
So I ask you this, so moving forward, like, would you be excited to see Deadpool interact with like MCU characters, interact with like a Spider-Man, interact with Hulk, like, I think the possibilities coming out of this movie are just endless in terms of like just what they can do. Like,
I suppose so, but I mean,
just handle it a little bit better. Just do better next.
Okay, so even going into some of this other stuff, because we were talking about some of the plot. Like, okay, the whole thing with Cassandra Nova and the Paradox dude. Like, Cassandra Nova in particular had a great performance, and her powers were visually stunning.
Oh man, that's creepy. Yeah,
yeah, but the motivations and the idea behind the character. It just seemed.
I think Paradox was kind of funny because
especially Paradox.
I could understand Paradox. I thought of it like this: he's like that worker at the office, like who wants to kind of like half-ass his job. He realizing, okay, it'll take me a whole day to do this, but I know a quicker way to do it, like an hour. But he knows for sure it'll mess everything up, but he wants to do it because he's lazy. that reminded Paradox's whole plan was because he's lazy. Couldn't wait 10,000 years to have it run out, like the timeline run out. So like he did it. So the motivation, I can honestly, it honestly was kind of refreshing because it's like he's not evil. He's just lazy and kind of dumb because he doesn't really think stuff through. But like the motivation of it was, I thought was hilarious.
I suppose that's fair.
I thought it was hilarious. Like
I just had a hard time making sense of it.
I understand
in the moment
because of what he did that to like do like such a huge. It made no sense.
Yeah, but, it felt like a little bit like a meta commentary. Like, oh, we just wanted to shut down the Fox stuff.
Exactly. Exactly.
Again, a lot of the stuff, I still never got how he got to 616 or why he truly cared. But, you know, moving past that. And then suddenly, oh, hey, there's an anchor character. And since Logan died, your universe is doomed to die over a long period of time.
It's a brand new
concept. And also, why did they even need... I mean, it seems that before they had ways of just pruning timelines, like openly just pruning a timeline.
They did.
But and now they need a whole special illegal machine to do so. It didn't seem like it was a difficult... It felt like before they just had the authority to just prune a timeline when they didn't feel like
it. No, they did, but Paradox said it wasn't quick enough, so I'm going to make this crazy machine to make it quicker. He wanted to make it efficient. That's the only reason why.
I don't know. Like when Loki got plucked out, it seemed like the timeline he was in got like the whole thing got removed instantly. That was the female Loki's Sylvie's thing.
Yeah,
and her original timeline had gotten nuked out of existence.
Yeah, right? No. What happens is they pluck you out and they set that timer, and that timer just resets everything. That's what that does. It doesn't prune it. It just resets it to where you're never there.
I don't know. I don't know. It just seemed like I don't know why they needed this new machine. It felt weird that they had a MacGuffin scene where they casually almost had a villain that had never been introduced before almost destroy everything, the entire multiverse all at once.
She got really close to spaghettifying everything.
Just casually, just like walking in and being like, whoops, let me just do this with no real... It felt comedic. Like it just felt like there was the kind of stuff where you're supposed to have a big stakes moment.
She let them go, and that was really cool of her. I think she was just like, you know what, I have nothing else. The Charles I know is dead, so I can just go and just kill everything and make the void the home. It's a crazy plan, but I can see why. And I can see how that when Wolverine was like, hey, the Charles would have like scoured the galaxy to get you. Like, I get it, but I get why that didn't hit her. It hit her for a second, but she was like, nah, man, I don't screw all this.
I don't know. It just, she was a good actress. The Emma powers Korn. Looked cool.
Emma Korn's amazing actress.
Right, yeah. But the motivations and the writing behind it all barely there. I feel like, okay, if you're going to make the excuse, it's a comedy movie, so just it doesn't have to be that deep. Sure, but then do a Thor Ragnarok type plot, where it's like, okay, you know, it's not particularly serious. There's some serious sentimental moments. There's some feels mixed in, some character building with some of the stuff people we know. But for the most part, okay, yeah, you know, you have the Grandmaster, right? Jeff Goldblum's character.
Oh, yeah,
kind of a self-contained story.
Yeah.
Most of it's kind of silly. It's easy to follow.
Yeah.
You don't have to think too hard. I was like, oh, why is the Grand... Okay, because he's in charge and he wants to be in charge, right? You don't have to like think about, like, oh, why is Paradox doing this? And like, did you get what he was trying to do?
Mm.
Right? Oh, why is this machine here when they already had this other thing?
You think they overcomplicated it?
Yeah, they overcomplicated it. Right, the first two movies... Okay. First movie, okay, he gets cancer. He wants a cure. Some evil dude gives him some kind of weird, bizarre cure that makes his life even worse. And so he gets pissed off and tries to kill him.
Second movie, he saves a kid T2 style. Easy to follow. Cool.
Yeah.
I think the third one did what Quantumania should have done. If you want to go wacky, go wacky like Deadpool Wolverine does. And like do it in a cool way that like means something. I wish Quantumania had done that with just what they were promising. But I think where that one stumbled, I really do think Deadpool Wolverine did a great job of... It's tough to make a really good trilogy. I think this is a really good trilogy. I think it's not among the best. I think some might argue it's some of the best Marvel trilogies. That's maybe a discussion for another time. But I think it's a really great trilogy. Just 1, 2, 3 movies. This was a great high note to end on.
One of my last big criticisms is that. The action was, for the most part, and the gore, like the R-ratedness of it, was pretty mediocre.
Oh, really? Oh. I thought that was a selling point, but I think they also nailed that personally. But what about
okay,
it?
Okay, so the fight scenes. Mm-hmm. Most of the big fight scenes were a big CGI mess. Bunch of dudes, flailing about. You barely tell what was going on.
I was talking about the final Deadpool.
With the one fight. With the Deadpools, or the one with
that was an awesome
with
fight,
the cameo, the cameo fight with
the hand to hand big fight in the square. Oh, you don't like that one?
Cassandra Nova.
Oh,
it just felt like a mess. It just felt like a mess. Like a great.
Yeah, I remember Aaron saying the same thing. Like he just didn't like how it was shot. Okay.
Yeah. It just felt like a visual mess. Like yeah, you could kind of see some cool stuff in there, but it felt like overbloated. It was something like that worked in Guardians of the Galaxy because they didn't try to go for too much, and the characters were more simplistic. But here you got five different characters.
You didn't think the cool stuff that Channing Tatum did? That was really cool. That really, really cool.
Channing Tatum actually was, in particular, was pretty cool. And I thought he was the best cameo, even though he's technically not even a real cameo. he was hilarious. I thought he was one of the best parts of the movie.
He's such a meme right now, Channing Tatum.
I thought he was one of the best parts of the movie.
Well, I'm going to make a name for myself, y'all. Ooh, that.
But, again, a lot of it was just a visual mess.
I got you, man.
I'll compare it to the scene with Task Force X in Deadpool 2.
Oh, the team where they jumped out the plane?
Yeah, when they jumped out the plane.
That was a hilarious
right.
scene.
First of all, just the comedy inherent in that. It just sets it up like a normal, perfect, straight action scene. All epic, all cool team-up scene with the new team. Very much classic superhero trope, right? And then, boom, they immediately subvert your expectations. Get everybody, massacred in visually creative and gruesome ways. Kind of stuff that makes you go like, ooh, and look away from the screen.
Yeah,
just scrunch away from the screen because it's hard to look at, directly face first. It was a lot of blood and guts on the screen, but not visually distinct in a way that made you go clench up inside and flinch.
I don't know. That opening scene with when he used Wolverine's body was inventive.
I will say that one scene, that was actually pretty great.
I was laughing at Dance Pool, the dancing one. I was audibly gasp laughing. Yes.
No. That opening scene with Deadpool actually set a high...
It set the tone,
I think. Very high tone for the
movie.
I definitely
set the tone. It's my favorite of all the intros. Each because they had Celine Dion the last one. Yeah. The first one was just call me, Juice Newton. This one just took it a step further.
I actually thought that was a pretty amazing scene. I'll give you that. But a lot of the other ones, again, just visually indistinct.
And also this because this director Sean Levy, he did Free Guy.
Where it's just throw up a bunch of CGI at the screen, and not really think about the actual direction of that fighting too much. Also, I gotta call out too. I know this is kind of Deadpool's thing, but this is something She-Hulk did, and it's frankly a lot of this is man, why is She-Hulk so hated and this so beloved? There's a part of me that's like that. It's like. Made a lot of the same mistakes She-Hulk did, in my opinion. It's a funny movie that wasn't quite that funny. A bunch of stuff thrown on screen to see what worked. But anyways, She-Hulk at the end, they lampshaded the whole thing where it's oh, hey, look at all these bad things we do in Marvel writing. Oh, hey, look at this big CGI fest we always have. Look at this corny cameo with a random side character nobody knows about we always have. Look at all these things we're making mistakes of. Where it's haha, we're self-aware. Mm-hmm. Look, we're in on the joke. We know we're messing up and we hear your criticisms, right? But it's okay. You just saying the criticisms back to us while saying, haha, look how funny, is not actually proof that you now understand what's wrong and that you're actually fixing it.
But it's still funny, though. That's my argument.
It is funny.
That's what I think that's the ha-ha moment of it.
And She-Hulk was funny in the moment, too. Right when the Feige bot started going off, and that was a very clever, hilarious scene. Yeah. But guess what? The immediate next project from Marvel made a bunch of the same mistakes. Right now, in fact, pretty much all of them since then have made a bunch of the same mistakes. Right, not quite the same with this movie, but we have it didn't seem it seemed like they were lampshading oh look. We're clever, we're in on the joke, we know this is bad, but you know, we're not actually going to learn our lessons and make it good. We're just going to repeatedly say, like, ha, look at us. We know it's bad. Ha, ha.
But
also, please laugh.
But this is the only movie they're making. This is the only movie that's coming out this year. So we haven't even seen whatever comes out next will then, I guess, validate that joke that you're saying. Because we can't really say that about them. Because
since I already saw them do it in She-Hulk, and they already kind of failed to update the failing model after that, that's where my worry is, right? Like, you can't be like, oh, look, a She-Hulk, we're going to make fun of the big CGI fight at the end and the random cameo at the end. And every single movie after that still has the big CGI fights and then the random cameo at the end.
And then the newest movie makes the same joke. In fact,
even CGI had, like, Hulk's son randomly pop out at the end. Man. You know what I mean? Again, even She-Hulk didn't replace that crappy ending that they were supposedly building and that she was ripping on with a better ending. They just skipped all that is out. We're just at the ending now because, you know, again, they didn't write something better. They just said, oh, look how bad it would have been if we just went with what we normally do.
Right. Okay, I see your point.
I'll compare it to the lampshading again in Deadpool 2, the scene with Sazie Beats, the first scene where you really see her luck powers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The fight with Domino.
Yeah, yeah.
Where, like, she's just running across the
whole big fight, yeah.
Yeah, and, like, the trucks are blowing up and everything is going her way. Like, while that's happening, Deadpool's sitting there like, oh, yeah, luck is a stupid power. It's not cinematic. It wouldn't work.
We're seeing
what would you ever do it?
Being and proven it's like, wrong, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just being proven wrong. So, again, yeah, they're in on the joke. It would be easy to say, oh, wait, her superpower is luck? What does that mean? That sounds stupid. Why would you even show? Okay. What would that even mean? She just flips a coin and it lands the right way? Who cares? And then when you, okay. And you're making fun of it, so this makes it a little more clever because you get the criticism and then you're showing us why the criticism is wrong.
Okay.
This is just laughing at the criticism and then being like, I hope you forget that we criticized it because we laughed at it.
I think they're able to make that joke and then follow it up with a cool. In my opinion, I think they're able to follow that up with a really cool action scene with them killing the whole core of Deadpools, which was another like really cool like
it
cameo.
Was pretty cool in a way, but again, it was just visually nondescript. There was like too much stuff happening on screen.
Man, how about
him
getting his final cowl on? That was awesome.
I thought that was awesome. Like, I'll admit that. It was cooler than I thought
amazing.
It would be. It was cooler than I thought it would be.
I didn't think I'd get that.
I'm the guy where even the movie was like, oh, yeah, you got to wear it. Like, you got to earn the suit and stuff. I'm like, I just don't care, y'all. I've seen Wolverine for 20 years. He hasn't once had a goofy-looking yellow suit, and has worked out perfectly fine this whole time.
But I'll say one, the people that actually, like, read the comics, like, It really was a big deal to see it because it's like, why haven't they done it? It's like everyone's gotten the comic accurate except for that guy, and he died
not everyone. I mean,
7 years ago. So it's like
not necessarily everyone, but yeah. I get where people are coming from, and you know what? Fine, you know, I hope comic book nerds that was a highly fulfilling moment. For me, it's like okay, I mean, cool. Like that's an Easter egg. That's not like a meaningful part of the movie. Like, oh, right. Look, he's wearing the suit and he got the cowl on. I mean, the cowl looks like the kind of thing no sane human being would ever wear in a real fight. Frankly, it's like these big metal things an enemy could easily grab and twist you around, and suddenly you can't see. I mean, just from a practical perspective.
Well, yes, I guess we could say the same thing about Batman, but I think it just
big. These are like really easy to grab onto.
Yeah, they are pretty big.
It's like massive. It's like these big plates.
I didn't realize
they're like grabbable.
I didn't realize how big.
You're gonna grab with little horns. It's not that easy.
Yeah, I didn't realize how big
they're just fucking massive. You know, and they're metal, right? They're not gonna like rip. I don't know. It's just like I'll admit it did look cooler than I was expecting. I was a little more hyped for that than I was expecting, but still, my overall take is I never really cared about the suit, and I'm not going to start pretending to now just because some people do. Like,
yeah,
I'm not shitting on that, you know. Props to
those
who do, but that's not something that made the movie more exciting
for me. It didn't add for me.
I frankly think, okay. I mean, it worked for this movie, but if they had done it in the original X-Men, I would have thought that shit looked corny compared to everything else.
Gotcha.
Right? Like, we've gotten to the point where they learn how to pull these things off. But that shit would have looked corny if they came out in 98 with that yellow ass suit.
That's why they didn't. No, but yeah, Juan, I'm glad you're able to give me your rundown of this. I know you were a couple weeks too late, but no, definitely well deserved time to chew on it.
If Disney can rehash all its own content, we can rehash our 2-week-old content
so
as well.
So can Mooney.
Remember when we did a review of Deadpool 2 weeks ago, Cosi?
Yeah, I remember that. No, but thanks, brother. That's great. It's been great.
No, so yeah, that's my take on it. I don't know. I want to throw a bone and do say some fun stuff. The credits in particular, frankly, the send off to Fox, everyone's talking about, like, the emotional send off. The credits are such a good job of that. The credits.
Oh, the whole Green Day photo montage. Yeah,
the photo montage. That was lovely.
Yeah.
The scene at the end with Captain America Johnny Blaze.
I'm Johnny Storm. Yeah.
Johnny
yeah.
Storm
yeah.
was hilarious.
A young Chris Evans. Yeah, that would be cool.
That shit was hilarious. I thought that was honestly funnier than most of the actual jokes in the movie. I mean, there's some quality stuff there. And all things considered, this is better than some of the other stuff. Like, this is better than the Marvels. This is better than Secret Invasion. It's at least a fun movie.
Yeah, and again, it's the only one Marvel's having coming out this year. Next year, we have Captain America, Brave New World, and Fantastic Four, so...
But yeah, I will just say, like, if you're going to make a fun movie where you don't want people to think about the plot too much and the writers don't want to think about the plot too much, make a simple plot. This is a general advice. I mean, you know, I don't know why they need to complicate shit this much. Frankly, just as a last little miniature rant before we wrap this up, I'm out on the whole multiverse Marvel thing. I was always out from the beginning. I was actually really excited in Spider-Man, was it Far From Home?
Spider-Man No Way Home.
No, the one with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Oh, Jake Gyllenhaal, yeah. Far From Home, yes.
Far From Home. Okay, so in the trailers from that, it was like, oh, I'm from a different version of Earth.
From Earth, yeah.
It very much felt like they were teasing the multiverse, and like this was going to be the start of the multiverse. And then they came in and go like, psych, it was a joke. He was played for laughs. Well, not laughs, but for trickery. There is no multiverse. Like, at no point, like, they actually made it very clear, you know, there was no multiverse thing. I mean, in that movie. In that movie, there was no real hint of the multiverse.
Okay, technically you're correct. Yes,
they just played with the idea, but they're like, there's nothing that give you the way the end of the movie is like, oh, this is actually, we're going to see another multiverse now. Nothing that actually showed that in the movie. And I was frankly super relieved because I've always thought the multiverse was kind of a dumb storytelling gimmick, right? It can be kind of fun in certain big events, certain like... limited time things, but as a whole concept to build a whole phase or multiple phases around at this point. We hop to a different world and we see a slightly different version of Doctor Strange or a slightly different version of Spider-Man. It was just kind of cool when we had other Spider-Mans and they did a good job of building the villains and the Spider-Mans into a coherent plot. But now they're just throwing shit in there and being like, oh, we have... Now Robert Downey Jr. is a different Doctor Doom. He might actually be like a variant of Tony Stark that now is suddenly Doctor Doom. Who knows? Or maybe he's not. Maybe he is. We have these random cameos where it's like, oh, we can just do this. We can just bring in people from these defunct movies. And then the audience goes like, hey, remember that guy? I remember that guy. And then they get excited and we just shove the member berries down their mouth. I don't know. There's been nothing here. I mean, No Way Home was a pretty great movie. That's been the closest. But even that was a lot just like, oh, it's so cool that I get to see these old Spider-Mans I have these feelings for, rather than, wow, this is such a cool concept now. I've never seen something like this. I don't know.
I see what you mean. I think something like Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, Into the Spider-Verse, you know what? Stuff like that.
That was so well done.
I think stuff like that where the concept of multiverse, I will always offend this and disagree wholeheartedly. The concept is not bad. Concepts aren't bad. The multiverse as a concept is great. How it's been executed has been, for better or worse, not that great. Again, it's like you have great stories, but you just have to make sure you can translate it to from script to screen, and just haven't done it. So but you get something like a Spider-Verse where they were able to translate that, and it was actually like a very, very good interpretation of the comics and the multiversal story as a whole. So
I will give you that. I think part of what works well with Spider-Verse is that it's just trying to anchor a single storyline rather than a whole phase.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Where, I don't know, it just, It's just too much. It just feels like we're spiraling to the point where I'm not sure what I'm supposed to care about with Marvel.
Like, what is this? Yeah.
Are these supposed to be standalone movies at this point? We're just getting random stories. Are we building towards something? There's an Avengers movie coming out, so theoretically we're building towards something, but I don't see it. Like, there was, like, even from the first, okay, from the first Iron Man, there was, okay, here's going to be the Avengers program. Right, you got the end credit scene, you get Nick Fury,
yeah.
Boom, here's the Avengers program. Okay, so now that gives you the through line up to the first Avengers
movie. Yeah, the next 4 years, you know what's going
to
happen.
Yeah. Then you get to the Avengers movie, the first Avengers movie, and then boom, Thanos comes up at the end of it.
The Infinity Saga begins.
And they start. Yeah. So they start the Infinity. This is now the big part of the Infinity Saga.
The next 6 years.
So building the next two phases, build up through that. Phase two, add some of the Infinity Stones, add some of the lore, adds a little bit more to Thanos. And then phase three is when it fully kicks into gear. The universe expands, but not too quickly and randomly. And there's a clear continuation. Like, okay, we're going from Tony Stark. Oh, suddenly we have the Avengers. Okay, we're going to build out the Avengers team. Oh, now we have the Avengers team fighting together, fielding a big threat. Okay, now there's a bigger threat. Yeah. There's a real,
momentous threat. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to build that up for another 10 years.
Yeah.
And then, you know, culminate that in this great, amazing experience where we see all these characters that we've built up over time come together to take out this main villain. Phase four and five does not have that.
Yeah, it's a lot of different projects without a lack of like focus or through line, which
they're all spinning into each other, they spin outwards into more defunct projects. Like, look at the Eternals coming up with multiple different post-credit scenes to introduce multiple characters.
We haven't seen them since.
And
we won't see them.
So. We haven't seen Hercules from Thor, Love, and Thunder. We haven't seen Charlize Theron's character.
Yeah,
we haven't even seen Shang-Chi, and he was an actual main character.
Well,
he had his own movie.
I know recently Shang-Chi himself, like the actor Simu Liu, he all but confirmed that they're working on it too, but you know, it's been like 3 years. It sucks we haven't seen him.
It's been like 3 years and literally nothing.
And he's amazing.
The only one that's only character that's kind of been in multiple is Doctor Strange at this point.
Or N. Wong.
Those are two guys that are apparently the main through line of the MCU.
Which I'm cool with. I love Wong. I love Benedict Wong. I love both of those. Wong's awesome.
But I don't know. Just one guy that appears in multiple movies.
Yeah.
Right. Am I crazy? You can't have Sam Wilson show up in, you know, Spider-Man. No, I don't know. It just feels like there's no connection. There's no connective tissue.
I'm just hoping now with this, we're going to focus on one movie this year, which is great. Almost like a reset button going into next year, 2025. We're going to have some, more coherent stuff and just more quality.
If Marvel, more quality. If this movie, if Deadpool vs. Wolverine had ended up with them destroying all the Marvel storyline, like they had just come up and like, ha, gotcha, we're just going to blow everything up and start over. I honestly would not have been that upset.
Just a complete reset.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I'm not sure what I'm supposed to be excited for. Like, I'm not sure which characters I'm supposed to think are amazing. I'm not sure which projects are supposed to be good. You know what I mean? There's no Iron Man to lock me in. There's no Steve Rogers to give me hope.
Yeah, there's no anchor character that we're all like kind of fixated on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an uphill battle. They kind of have to like kind of start from scratch almost and like build up to. But I think with this roster of characters they have coming up with the Fantastic Four, with the X-Men, I think we're going to, and just with this pivot, they're going to stop doing the whole stories going to nowhere and just be more focused. Time will tell, and we only see what they have to say, but they're showing that, hey, we're going to just calm down and kind of put out some quality. And with this being the first step towards that, towards this MCU rehabilitation, I think this was a very, very solid first step. I think this is what you needed. Here, cool. We're out until 2025. So, going forward, I'm definitely excited. Definitely understand your apprehensions, but I'm excited to see what they have coming up next because we have a couple of bangers coming out next year.
Okay. I'll see. I suppose we'll wait and see. All right. So I think it's time for the end of the show, Cozy. It's time for our plug of the week.
Yes, sir.
All right. I'll go ahead and kick us off. Plug of the week. I'm going to plug this Apple TV show, A24 show called Sunny.
Ooh, Sunny.
S-U, like Sunny. Like
okay, Sunny
Day.
Okay, cool.
I will especially the first few episodes really capture you and bring you in. It's a kind of a story about basically an American expat widow living in Japan, and her wife or her husband and son have just died in a plane accident. And okay. she's in a society, kind of a sci-fi society, where they have these home bots, these little home servant robots.
Okay.
Cute little face, almost has a little Tamagotchi kind of face. She makes cute expressions. One of my favorite parts of the show is the cute little expressions the robot makes while she's talking. And yeah, it's kind of the story. She's investigating what happened. Like, it turns out the robots have a kind of a dark undercurrent to them. I will say, even though I'm like hyping it, I will critique it a little bit in that it starts off seeming like a corporate espionage sci-fi kind of story, where like the evil robot takeover or the evil corporation using the robots for evil activities. Mm-hmm. And then it turns almost more into a crime thriller where like the Yakuza are the ones kind of involved and shit.
Yeah, I'm looking at this.
I'll see. I think it's still fun, although I think it's been losing the thread a little bit the past episode or two. The season hasn't ended yet, so I'm hopeful they'll find a way to tie it all together and make it an excellent show. But it's still a fun show, interesting, kind of quirky sci-fi,
yes,
kind of a little bit of horror, off-putting elements that A24 is known for. I think you'd like it, Cozy.
It has Rashida Jones in it.
Rashida Jones.
The only person
that recognized. That Parks and Rec a lot. But most of everybody else is Japanese.
I just saw her. I was like, fixate.
It's set in Japan. Okay. It's set in Japan. Everything is, pretty much everything is Japanese. Rashida Jones is the central character. Probably won't recognize anybody else.
All right. It's Apple TV Plus?
Apple TV Plus.
Sunny, man. Okay.
Yeah, fun show. I wouldn't call it a 10 out of 10 so far. But I think if they stick the landing, it'll go up in my esteem a bit. It just, there's not as much of the corporate kind of behind-the-scenes government stuff as I was expecting, frankly. But it's still a fun show. And Rashida Jones does great in it.
All right.
What about you, Cozy?
I'm actually going to plug our first ever restaurant. So I went and got some really good food. I was actually in Miami for work, and there are many places. There was that one Venezuelan place I told you about, but I'm not going to shout that one out. I'm actually going to shout out another place. This Jamaican place, it's called Jerk, not spelled J-R-K. The best jerk chicken I've had, probably in my life. I've had jerk chicken a lot before, and I just love this one. This is located in downtown Miami, if you're ever there. It's delicious jerk chicken. Not a lot of ample parking, but again, the food is exquisite. So yeah, I want to shout out Jerk, the location in Miami. They have they're opening up another one, they said, but I'm not seeing the information for that one. But yes, this one is located in downtown Miami, and it's a Jamaican cuisine restaurant, and I highly recommend it.
All right, sounds good. I'll hit it up if I remember in Miami again.
Yes, sir.
All right, Cozy, fun show as always,
dude. Fantastic episode, man. And thank you, Juan. And I want to also thank you, viewers. Thank you guys for listening. As always, if you want to listen to us, you can always look us up on Spotify under the name It Was Mooney. You can also look us up on YouTube under the same name to get our long-form podcast in video form. Once again, my name is Cozy, and I'm joined always by Juan E.B. Until next time, peace out.
Adios.